This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard. Well, hello, and welcome to this episode of the Astrology University podcast. And I'm joined today by Frank Clifford. Hey, Frank.
Hi there, Tony. How are you doing?
Great. It's good to have you here. And Frank runs the London School of Astrology, which is now also online. So be sure to check that out. And Frank and I are going to talk a little bit about, we're going to talk about a few different things. We're going to talk about compatibility and also planets being in certain signs and in houses and some things that get said and how we might be able to work with them. Frank, you and I were just having this conversation casually. And what's one of the things that kind of gets you going when people talk about compatibility? We were talking about the example of people will hear, oh, a Cancer person can't work with a Libra person.
Yes, well, it's deeply ingrained, because I think from the early books that people pick up, whether it's Linda Goodman's Relationship Signs or the Love Signs book that she did in the 70s, people have that idea that certain signs can't work together. And of course, certain signs work together in our own charts all the time, and they manifest in different ways. So if you've got a square in your chart between the sun and moon, maybe between, you know, Libra and Capricorn, that's something that you're born to work through, born to work with. So I have a lot of bees in my bonnet about how final these classifications can be. So it can be frustrating to hear that. And also, one of the things that we do when we're learning astrology from the very beginning is that we find out the signs and the moon, sun signs, moon signs, ascendant signs of the people that we like, the people that we dated and we're no longer dating. And we come up with an idea that, it's because they have the moon in Capricorn that we didn't get on, or I'll never date another moon in Sagittarius because they're not faithful. And I spend a lot of time avoiding these comments, and they're always popping up on Facebook where people are saying, well, where do you see this in the chart? Can you see faithfulness in the chart? It's more, which sign is the most unfaithful? And then people have these opinions.
All of them. And the answer is all of them.
All and none of them, yes.
Yes. So
it's a lot of what I do, and what you're doing as well through Astrology University, is getting people to look at those things again and try to find a useful way forward to actually say something to a client or to a friend when we look at their charts that's not final or not the only way that you can see this. And so it's frustrating, but it's a particular mindset, and I'm hoping that most of the people who've got that on their mind aren't seeing clients and saying that to them. I'm really hoping that clients are seeing astrologers who are thoughtful and careful of what they say, honest, of course, and ethical, but not these simple ideas of what works and what doesn't. And we're not just talking synastry, we're talking natal charts as well. So you've got a planet in the 8th house or the 12th or the 6th, etc. However you believe, whatever the reason is you have a birth chart, whether you believe you signed up for it or it's accumulation of karma or just a happening as you're born, there's got to be a way to work reasonably with your placements. I believe people signed up for their charts and they signed up to have that experience. So why would you want to avoid that or classify that as strong, weak, wrong, right, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
So it's a strange mentality, but it's a very fixed type of mentality sometimes.
Well, it's also, whether you signed up for it or not, it's what you have to work with. So why not learn how to work with it? You know, I think, you know, in defense of some of what gets said, and part of what you're talking about has been going on a long time with astrology. And one of the reasons why I think we make these generalizations and we create these kind of, you know, bumper sticker one-liners that get tossed about, and now they're just tossed about all over the internet and online and in astrology apps, because those kind of environments are more suited to short form communication, short sentences, short paragraphs. Astrology is complicated. And if we're trying to deliver astrology to the general public, we need to speak a language they can understand. And we find ourselves sort of distilling things down to these short phrases when it's actually more suited to a longer conversation that you could have in a reading, like you were saying, with a professional astrologer who had, you know, some good ethics and a lot of training. But because of the nature of the internet and blogs and even podcasts, we find ourselves having to maybe over distill some of these concepts down. And then before you know it, somebody has heard, you know, if you're an Aries, you should never date a Capricorn. And then also, you know, what you were saying is important. And on a personal level, in our own experience, especially if we're not astrologers, our limited experience of astrology, we have that one experience with somebody who's a Capricorn, and we assume that all Capricorns are like that. It's really just what that person is doing. You were talking about the concept of working with the energy in your chart, and that's just how that person was working with their chart and the choices that they made. But another person, even with that same chart, might be completely different.
Absolutely, because we're brought up with people who have their own charts, their own emphases, their own issues, with parents who had their own charts. So we're constantly in an environment that's not isolated, where we just become a particular type of tree based on the seed. It doesn't work like that. Certain parts of us get watered more. Some of them get put in the shade, that sort of thing. I think, speaking of Linda Goodman, I remember in one of the introductions to her book, I think it may have been the Sun Signs book, and now people joining astrology don't really know her book. And yet when I began astrology over 30 years ago, that was what everybody read, and that's what introduced them to astrology very often. And she says it's like your sun sign's like saying you're an American. It gives people a particular idea, and your moon or your ascendant might then be, well, you're an American, but you're from Texas, and it makes it more specific to people. But then, you know, you go to Texas and there are millions of different types of Texans, of course. But I always remember that analogy simply because it's easy to categorize, and we all need to get a grasp on what Saturn might be in the chart, or by transit, or what an Aries might be, or a Virgo might be. But it's just the beginning. It's the first label, and everything else is what the discovery is that's so exciting about astrology. Astrology is also simple and complex. There's a simplicity to it where we're more complicated than our birth chart. Yeah, because you could look at 10 people with Venus in Virgo and you'll get 10 different experiences. Right. They'll all have that quality of Virgo in some way that's been brought out, pushed down, expanded upon, whatever it might be. But there's that to think about. But also, we're complex, but astrology has 500 ways of telling us maybe 50 characteristics of who we are. So when somebody says, oh, you're stubborn, people might immediately think, oh, Taurus. But they could think of, and I could give them another 10 different placements that I've seen with people that are particularly stubborn or difficult. Not that stubborn is necessarily difficult. So in some ways, human nature is more complex, and astrology is a language that has, in its complexity, has an ability to describe in many, many different ways who we are and get to that conundrum of you're stubborn or you're creative, etc. So it works in both ways. There's a simplicity about it, and we're complex. And then we have a minimal number of characteristics and reactions. You know, I might be possessive, I might be mean with my money. And then the chart has many, many different ways of suggesting how that might be seen in the horoscope.
And I think one of the amazing things about astrology is that if you do kind of open up your understanding of astrology can handle the complexity, right? It can handle the complexity of us humans and our human experience. I like to think too of, you know, you were just describing a situation where you can kind of, somebody's presented a difficulty or a problem to you that they're describing, and you can see where that might be in the chart. But that same signature can also tell you how they could work with it or how they could respond to it differently, right? If they're coming to you with a problem and they're asking for help with that problem, and then you locate that in the chart, that energetic in the chart that might be behind that problem, that same energetic could have the solution to it.
Well, yes. Yeah, see, the solution is always in the difficulty, in the issue, isn't it? And that's that's what we do. But just branding somebody having a weak Venus or ineffectual or ineffective Mercury or whatever it might be, you know, it's interesting. As you say, it works well in a bite-sized Twitter world, but we're not all twits or twitterers. And we want to astrology should be as beautiful as the people that you're looking at, and it should be as inspiring as it can be, because life is it's tough, it's complex, but at the heart of what we all do, we want to live and we want to experience our lives and become what we feel we want to be. And that never really goes, whatever you bury it under and however many people you put before your own or their needs before your own, when astrology is part of revealing that.
Definitely. Well, speaking of planets in certain signs and planets blending together, we're going to be co-teaching a course, and then Karen Hommacher-Sontag is going to be preparing a lesson for this course as well coming up in June. Called Chart Synthesis 1-on-1, and it's about planet sign and house blends, which students often have trouble with. And you were talking about, you know, in your own chart, you might see some of these same blends that you've read are challenging or difficult, or you have this planet, and then you read that it's in detriment or fall, or somebody tells you that planet's in a weak house or something like that, and you're just learning astrology. And, you know, even if you don't know what a planet in detriment means or why we say that it's in detriment, because there's something interesting behind that. It doesn't sound like a good word, right? It sounds like a, oh, something you might not want, right? But these dynamics can be in your own chart too, not just when you're blending with other people. And so when students start blending planet signs in the houses, that alone is confusing. But when you start in adding in some of these ideas, it becomes especially difficult and challenging. What are some of the first steps that you recommend people take when they're starting to try to blend planet signs and houses?
Ah, interesting. I always say study as many charts as possible. Instead of thinking, I'm reading that Virgo is X, Y, and Z, or Z, thinking the moon in this sign means this, have a look, print out the charts of the people you're closest to, the people you know well, people you admire on television that you have a biography at home with, all those sorts of things. Print their charts out and look to try and see in the chart what it is you know about them. So maybe somebody that's been married 6-7 times, the chart may not give you an indication of that, but you understand a personality trait in the chart. And look for that. Look for what people have in common. You might think, well, these two people in my life are both quite similar in some way. It might be that they were both very driven to achieve or very materialistic. Where is that in their chart? You'll learn a lot more from that by seeking out what you already know about somebody, looking in the chart, rather than just rubber stamping what you think you know. So all Taurians are this, or Moon and Scorpios are that, etc. So, and that's probably the first place to start, is have a wide variety of charts of people you know well. And I always say this, but, you know, I learned astrology with a biography in one hand and a chart in the other, and I was always keen to understand that. I never started with that mental narrow mindset of, oh, the sixth house is a bad house, or the 12th house is weak. That never occurred to me, and it doesn't, well, apart from anything, it doesn't work. And whenever I hear that, I hear that somebody thinks that Mars in Libra is weak or in detriment, as it's classified, I want to show them half a dozen people I know in the public realm, or people I know, and say, look, this is a very interesting, constructive way to use that Mars in Libra. So understand that. I think we need to be careful how the judgments that we make, or the prejudgments. Astrology is full of many, many different prejudices that naturally filter down. So houses are an interesting one. Planets in detriment, in exaltation, etc. You have to look at anybody who succeeded, and you realize they're using all the different energies of their chart in interesting ways. It's never about a placement. It's about the courage to work with that placement. It's about the courage to understand who you are, the courage to get a bit of self-knowledge through astrology or through some other means, to take your life beyond your fears, anxieties, neuroses. The difficulty is that when somebody speaks about a so-called negative placement, they might be talking about your Saturn or a square in your chart or a planet in the eighth house. You're going to hear it. It's like having an antennae or a sensor. Anything that you worry about yourself or you're judgmental about yourself, you will meet an astrologer who repeats that. Or you'll look in a book or online and you'll think, oh, that's the reason why I don't trust. And you think, seriously? That placement is the reason why you don't trust? It's ridiculous. It's such a ridiculous connection. That placement represents an aspect of who you are that you've been working with. And if you're not working with it constructively and it ends up being distrustful of different situations, go back and work on that placement. It's not the cause. It's not the reason. It's not the full stop, the period point, as they say in America. It's not that. So we've got to undo a lot of that left brain thinking in terms of just this plus this equals that. It just doesn't work.
And what you're saying is, you know, touching on a big idea that we could have a longer conversation about, but not today, but just about how, you know, we humans, it's easier to look outside us for the cause of the problem than to go inside. And if you work with astrology, astrology always draws you back inside. It always draws you back to your natal chart. And that's where you can do really creative and even, we could say, alchemical work with yourself.
Absolutely. But the problem is, if you're listening to somebody who's identifying that part of your chart as negative, when you go back in, it becomes the reason for the problem. Right. Rather than an opportunity to explore it and go further. Right. So what can I do?
You can still turn inside and still have that same approach, like as if it's fixed and there's nothing you can do about it.
So you need a solution. And astrology is about providing insights and helping the person discover or rediscover solutions to their energies, their Mars energy, their Mercury energy. I said this at UAC a couple of years ago, and I put this in, and I thought, oh, this sounds fun. And I wrote on the bottom, I said, the only debility is an astrologer's inability to think outside the box and to be able to, their inability to think of something constructive to say about that placement.
That's a great point. So good, Frank.
Whenever I hear, and I heard a talk at UAC and from a very intelligent astrologer, and she basically had an opportunity. It was Mars and Saturn, and it was either stress and pain or depression. And I put my hand up and I said, are there any other options to this Mars and Saturn? Because I thought, you're so bright, you're so intelligent, you're really articulate, and you're saying this bullshit, this nonsense in the chart. And I was amazed. I was taken aback. And I thought, this astrology is full of so many brilliant minds. You think of the Darbys and the Lynns and the Melanies and the Brian Clarks and the Demetrias, all the people that we work with and we see. Brilliant minds. And then yet there's something that almost imprisons or handicaps us. And the last thing, if you've got a Mercury retrograde in your natal chart, the last thing that you want is to read something that says you're mentally backward or slow or you'll never get it. Because you know, we as astrologers have an opportunity to get people to truly explore a whole spectrum, a whole range of possibility in their charts and in their lives, in their energies and personalities. And if we can't do that, we need to just shut up and leave other people to do it, or just go back to the research and the books and learn. So with that thing, whenever I hear stupidity in that sense, I want to send them a whole list of charts of people who are doing something amazing with that placement.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And I mean, that's a great point that you made earlier too. It was making me think about how when we start learning astrology, a lot of us get exposed to cookbook astrology books, which are great. They're an important part of your learning because you have to learn what the different archetypes and symbols might mean. And the fact is that Mars in each of the 12 signs is very different. And so you have to kind of figure out what those differences might be so that you can describe it and understand it and so you can recognize it. But then you have to look at charts, like you said. And if you do look at a lot of charts, a lot of those limited definitions of how something might express, they don't hold up. They don't hold up, like you said. Like for every situation where somebody's describing a planet in a weak house or whatever, or in detriment, you can find examples of that looking like it's working out pretty well for them, right? Or that it's the source of their most creative gift to the world.
Yes. You never know what people do with their charts. You don't know from their chart. You don't know what work they've done, what they've created with it. You really don't. You can pretend you do, or you can be one of those people that say, I have an 80% success rate with prediction or some sort of nonsense like that. And really, we don't know when the person arrives what they've done with that, what opportunities they've had to express that. Somebody starts We did this a while ago. We don't have many mass murderers in England. It's not on the news very often, you know. When there is one, it becomes big news. And there, some years ago, there, as Uranus moved into Aries, there was a man who went off and just lost his cool, shot his twin brother, went down on a rampage and killed people. And it was a very, Derek Bird, his name was. And I commissioned four or five different people to write articles on him. And the sort of very fixed mindset came back and explained from the chart why he was a mass murderer, completely forgetting that he had a twin brother born a couple of minutes apart who actually died by his brother's hand rather than instigated anything.
Wow.
And all I want to say to people sometimes is, yes, you know, that Mars-Saturn worked very well for this person. It can work well for you. But put it... have somebody born at that same moment in Sudan, Ethiopia, where they've got their like 80% of the population living just on survival mode. They're not right. going to have an opportunity to experience that or to use that in the same sort of way. So there are 101 other factors that come into how we work with our charts. And if you know, we're a privileged few. This is a first world problem. Moaning about our charts and thinking about astrology, because most of the population don't have the opportunity to even have an insight into that aspect of our subject.
Yeah, if you're concerned with survival, then that's what's going to take up all your time. So yeah, I think that's a great example you used, and I think one of the differences might be, you know, talking about the articles that you had people write or the analyses they did of that chart, it's the difference between saying Uranus made him do that and saying this is what he did. This is how he used his Uranus in it, or his Uranus transit or the Uranus square in his chart or whatever it is.
Yes, there's a big difference. And that's the idea of the fatedness of your birth chart, that once you've got a birth chart, you can't change it. You can progress it. You can pretend. You can move it into a different house if you don't like your sun in the 12th. Stick it in the first if you want. Find something that makes you feel better. Or you can just deal with what you've got. I had a student the other night. We were talking about solar returns and the idea of setting a chart up for the place of birth, each solar return, the postal address, or exactly where they are in that moment. And her question was, what if you've got, you know, a so-called awful placement in your chart, and what about going somewhere else and having a solar return to make the most of it somewhere else, within a different house with a different thing? And I thought, well, what could be so bad in the chart? What, the sun in the 8th, sun in the 12th? You know, if I had a very heavy solar return with 12th house emphasis, that would be indication of what to do that year rather than run away from it. I'm not afraid of the 8th house. I'm not afraid of having a Mercury retrograde in the sky at any point. You know, it's a bizarre way of thinking. It's a fear or scare tactic sometimes. The idea that the 6th house is weak, tell the Gokulans that who discovered just the opposite.
Right.
And yeah, and I talk to astrologers, traditional astrologers sometimes about this as well, and they say, well, they're everything with the Gokulen work, when they found that the Kadan houses were the strongest indicators of character, you know, the ninth, the 12th particularly, and then the third and the sixth. When you had Mars there, it really indicated a strong Mars-like personality. Traditional astrologers tell me, well, it was rounded off to the hour, so maybe the planet was really in the first instead of the 12th. And what's amazing, what they don't know usually, is that Françoise Gokulin, who survived her husband by many years, when she heard that criticism, she went back to the hospital records in France and other places where they did it, and she did another test, because the people they were looking at, their birth times were rounded off to the nearest half hour or hour or 15 minutes. But in the hospital, they were rounded off to the minute. It's just that somebody in the birth registry just typed, if it was, you know, 3:04, they wrote 3 o'clock.
Okay.
And they just rounded it off. And she went back and did hundreds of hours more research into that area and still found there wasn't a difference with that.
Right.
So people are always looking to discredit certain theories, etc., as I am in a way here, trying to say, look, look at it, you know, study it, look at it in real lives, don't look at it in textbooks. We were talking a bit about Darby earlier, and Darby has a great quote. I hope she doesn't mind me saying it, but when a lot of these books that have been dug up over the years or found and translated are rich historical records of astrology. But Darby turned to me once and she said, well, what if that astrologer was an asshole and his book survived? You know, what if he was like the one in that community, they were like, oh my God, he's published a book and doesn't know anything. And yet his book was the one to be rediscovered and survived. And that really made me laugh, because yeah, there's a lot to be said for history, but we have amazing people in the 21st century doing brilliant work,
right,
with clients, with students. And that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to read that stuff rather than something that was applied to a society 300, 400, 500, 800 years ago.
Yeah.
Interesting material, but doesn't really relate to where we are now. And I'd rather listen to a number of other modern people talking who see clients.
Well, thanks for that, Frank. And I think the ancient material is interesting. I guess the way I feel about it is just that I have a stack of astrology books, like, so high that I'll never read all the ones that I'm really enamored with or interested in. So adding in all the books from the last few hundred years I don't see how I could ever get to all of them. I do think that, you know, I understand why they're important, of course, but I also understand how they could be intriguing, because there's a part of us that wants there to be an answer, right? One of the reasons why people say really definitive things about the chart, or they practice astrology that way, is because they want surety and certainty in their life. Well, unfortunately, that's not what life delivers. Life delivers constant change and growth. But I understand the impulse. And as part of that, it'd be pretty easy to imagine that what if there was just the one magic book that had the magic technique and the magic answer, and we just haven't found it and translated it yet. And so I get the desire and the drive to see that. And also, honestly, I've heard Demetra George teach, and she does a beautiful job of showing how there are parts of our tradition that were kind of lost in translation, and how beautiful they are and how well constructed they are, and how, you know, we say these things in modern astrology without realizing the elaborate construction behind it, right? Without really understanding where that comes from. So I think there's real value in learning from these ancient books from that perspective as well.
I agree. I think it's important to know your history. I think it's important in that sense to understand that the so-called bad houses are because they don't speak directly by aspect to the ascendant or the first house. Knowing that is interesting, classifying it as having something you can't escape, and it's awful, you know, because we have a chart that we can't escape. It's there from the moment we're born. And somebody telling me the placement's negative or won't achieve anything, that doesn't work for me. But yeah, the history of it is interesting. It's how it's then translated to be for natal astrology.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, when I teach electional astrology, I love electional astrology, and I realize that the simplicity of, if somebody wants to go into a lawsuit, the simplicity of electing a strong Mars and a strong Jupiter, perhaps, and different things, or a strong Mercury for a particular reason, making sure that it's in a place with trines rather than difficult aspects, making sure that it's in a sign that does the job you want it to do, or does a job that is a mercurial job if it's a mercurial pursuit. These are all important things. In human experience, we're far more complicated, and we don't have an election may last maybe for a company that lasts a few years, or a job application that results in something that we want. But a human being is a 40, 50, 80, 100 year experiment that continues to grow and develop and to use new aspects of who you are. So the idea that you're just fated to have one position that's bad or in detriment or something just sounds very narrow. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I love electional astrology as well. And talking about it gets us into that territory in that gray area. But even those charts that we might, you know, we should do an electional podcast, Frank, because that's a super fun topic. But even those charts, it's famously impossible to get the most perfect chart, right, for the outcome that you want, because you know, everything is complicated. But even if you do find some of those placements that you're really looking for to support that outcome, those are just like anyone's birth chart. They depend on how you use them, how you show up, the energy that you put in, and what you do with it. So you do get the job offer. How do you show up with that job, right? How do you show up at work? What do you do with the job once you have it? In other words, that first chart can say something about that too. So fascinating.
I mean, if you elect, you know, you could pick the perfect time, you and I could apply for the NBA, you know, to get a job there. It could be the perfect election, but you know, I'm not 7 feet, 10 inches or something, you know, right. So it's not, I could find the perfect moment, but not have the perfect circumstances that
exactly
that would get it for me. Or I could apply to be the next American Idol at a perfect election time, but can't sing.
That would be a problem.
I would
predict that you would not get onto the show.
Well, I probably would, and it would be a major embarrassment, that sort of thing, rather than anything else. So it would be, yeah. So it's interesting. But elections and horary, the original main use of astrology hundreds of years ago, is still there, and we can use it. But we have to look at natal charts differently, because we're a work of art, and we're in process.
I love that. Yeah, we're a work of art, and we're in process. I love that. I think that's a good note to end on for today, Frank. And if you would like to learn more about Frank and his work, visit the London School of Astrology online. Frank is also one of our instructors at Astrology University, of course. And Frank, you're going to be doing, we mentioned the course that we have coming up on June 2nd, and it's a 4-week course on chart synthesis. It's the first in a series on chart synthesis where we're teaching how to start blending planet signs and houses. But also in June, you're going to be a busy guy. You're going to be doing a webinar on June 6th for us that's going to bring in some of these electional ideas that you were talking about with your webinar, The Astrology of Lotteries, Gambling, and Winning. That'll be a really fun one. Although yes. I don't know how many people can actually visit casinos right now.
No, I'm not encouraging people to spend money as well. But
right, exactly, yeah.
It's interesting to watch. So we're going to have some fun looking at what to look at, looking at the charts of people who won a lot of money. But also, when I do it, when I have some fun, it's understanding the symbolism in front of you
right.
as well. And, you know, if you're in a very Pisces day, gravitate towards the machines or the situations or the numbers that are Piscean or Neptunian. Yeah. So it's going to be about that. It's going to be some fun. Yeah, people can gamble online, but again, I wouldn't recommend that. The more you gamble, the more you lose, really. That's why they give you like a 97% or 94% rate on these machines, because right. the more you play, eventually they'll recoup whatever you might win. So that's part of the instruction in June. And I think I'm doing a Midheaven Icy Floating. I think yes. that's in June as well, is it?
June 20th, the Floating MC Icy Axis. So you work with equal houses. Pole sign houses are really popular these days. And in both of those house systems, the MC and IC can float, meaning it might not be the start of the 10th house like it is in all the other house systems. So you're going to tell us how you work with that and interpret it. And then you'll be joined by Kelly Surtees, who uses whole sign houses. And she's going to describe how she works with and interprets it. And spoiler alert, they're probably pretty similar because you're basically adding in, you're seeing the meaning in the fact that it's still the MC, but it's in the ninth house. And how do you weave those houses together, right?
Yeah, we're gonna have some fun with that. Yeah.
So it'll be a really fun webinar. And it's a topic that confounds students for good reason, especially if they got exposed to a different house system first and then discover equal houses. Tune in for that one, June 20th, and we'll have a fun time with that. And Frank, thanks so much for being with us today. I can't wait to for the next podcast. We'll have to do electionals next. That'll be fun.
We'll do. Yeah, we'll do something that'll change the world, Tony.
Okay.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks, great Frank. Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.